Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's time for our weekly gathering where we discuss the biggest stories of the week. And my panel today in our Galway studio, Lisa Chambers, Fianna Fáil Senator and leader of the Shannon. In studio here with me, Nat O'Connor, Public Affairs Officer with Age Action, Ciara Phelan, Political Correspondent for the Irish Examiner, and Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD. You're all very, very welcome to the gathering. To Galway and to you, Lisa Chambers, let's talk about the supermarket prices, the cost of living crisis. What really do you think the government can do about this? Because it seemed to me when Neil Richmond asked retailers nicely for prices to come down, they smiled and said thanks very much and went on about their business.
Minister Richmond met with the retail forum and he spoke directly with the large retailers about this very issue, the cost of food and the significant levels of inflation and the prices people are paying for basic groceries. So his takeaway from the meeting was that it was quite positive, that he had a very frank conversation with them about the impact on families, on vulnerable people for basic grocery essentials. And they did give a reassurance that prices would reduce in line with input costs coming down. And the Taoiseach also made the point that, you know, we do expect to see as inflation eases off, which it is doing, which is good news. We do expect to see grocery prices and all other products coming down in line with that. Now, there have been
We saw the price of some of their own brand items coming down, but how much can we rely on those reassurances in circumstances where actually I think only one of our top five retailers actually publicises their annual results?
Yeah, look, I mean, the lack of transparency does pose a difficulty for us. And these are large multinational companies. They're big retailers here. So we've got the likes of, say, Tesco's, Aldi, Lidl, Supervalue, to name some of them. But they're the main players, I guess. I'm not defending the price levels that they're charging. Absolutely not. And I think, you know, consumers are rightly asking the question, how is it that almost like a domino effect, one retailer brings their milk down by 10 cent and overnight, like magic, the rest could do the same. And now we see Tesco announcing a 10 cent reduction on their bread and it gives them great publicity, that has to be questioned as well.
But these are small measures, you know, just even speaking with Minister Eamon Ryan this morning about, you know, the sheer scale of the inflation, the things are persistently high. What can the government do apart from having conversations and taking reassurances away from these retailers? Is it time for a windfall tax? Is it time to compel transparency, including in the markup of goods that we see on our shelves?
I mean, there is a limit to what government can do in terms of price controls. I think people accept that. But it is important that we have these conversations, that it's been discussed on primetime radio, that people are aware of this. And it does put pressure on retailers. Ultimately, competition is what drives down prices. And that will continue to be the case. So what the government can do and what it has been doing is supporting citizens and supporting households and people that are struggling with meeting basic costs. So we had a 2.2 billion social protection package for this year's budget. That's really significant. Lump sum payments with double child benefit, a fuel allowance of €400 direct payment, €500 extra for working family payment, €500 disability allowance. There are many direct payments and lump sum payments, and they were targeted at those that needed it most and those that were most vulnerable, specifically to address the cost of living and the increase in things like energy and food prices. So the government has been doing a significant amount to help those people that are struggling and having those conversations directly with food suppliers and making the point as well, we need to be very careful that we don't impact the primary producers. The farmers are not the people taking the hit when we're looking for reduction in food prices. It's quite obvious if retailers like the large supermarkets can reduce their prices like magic overnight, clearly they're making significant profits and they can afford to do that. And I would encourage them strongly to continue to do that and bring their prices down because we will continue to highlight this issue.
Encourage them strongly or bring in tougher measures?
Bring in tougher measures, absolutely. Price controls are needed here, not just in the food industry, but crucially in the energy industry. I was interested in the RTE report on this last night because food inflation overall is higher here than it is across Europe, but it's still at 13.1%, even though overall inflation is down to 7.2%.
And of course, the recent inflation figures didn't take into account these recent drops. So we may see that fall a little bit further, but persistently high.
Yeah, and I mean, Lisa mentioned there that the farmers can take the hit. I absolutely agree. But when you look at the rise in the cost of poultry, 16%, milk 24%, butter 19%, sugar, all the basics that families rely on to feed their children. And if the government don't intervene on this, then they're basically saying to the citizens, you are victims of the market. Mm-hmm. And Lisa's wrong to say that competition drives prices down. We've no evidence of that.
For the most part, they're private companies. They're not public utilities. So can the government go in and actually interfere in the market? Is it just a transparency drive or does it need something more?
I believe the government can interfere in the market and they can say that you have to stop profiteering. And one of the things that came out this week was that none of these supermarkets actually show their profits. Aldi do, but the rest of them don't.
They're private companies. They're entitled to do that.
Well, they may be entitled to do it under the current laws, but that's not good enough.
Families are struggling. Should we get them? And I see, I know that butter, milk and bread have come down recently, but they probably won't show up until later. But is it transparency? Is that what the government can put in pressure? Look, so if you go in and you see the markup on what they got a product in at, what they're selling at it, that would be a very interesting exercise.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we've been hearing from older people for years now about the cost of living, the difficulty of making ends meet and the fact that their money doesn't stretch further. So certainly having transparency about supermarket prices would be good. And there are researchers who look at those supermarket prices and they see how they've gone up year on year, far more than
inflation. There's retail correspondents who do nothing but that.
Well, this is
your basket of goods.
But our concern is that the state pension hasn't kept up with inflation, with the cost of living. So compared to what you could buy with your money in 2020, every week now the state pension will buy you €18 less. So your spending power has gone down. That's despite the extra €12 on the rate in January, because the spending power has gone down so much. And next year it'll be on average €25 less in spending power compared to 2020, unless we see a real change in the state pension. And all those one-off payments, you know, when you add them up, they don't bridge the gap. There's an awful lot of people left behind.
And there has been significant support from the public purse, particularly during the pandemic and afterwards, in terms of, you know, supporting that.
Well, no, I disagree with that. If you look now at the social protection budget, it's lower in real terms than it was in 2019, which is comparable in terms of levels of unemployment. So we haven't had this kind of inflation since the 1980s. And the state has been too slow to realise that for people who rely on a low income, a low welfare payment, and there's 1.5 million people who rely on a low payment, you know, welfare payment in this country, and many older people rely on the state pension as their main income. It hasn't kept up with inflation.
Ciara, just in case anyone missed it, there was a retail forum this week over the concerns over high food prices. People like Labour Shed Nash have been calling for a windfall tax. You know, Lisa was saying that Minister Richmond is very reassured after that meeting. But do you think it has teeth, this forum, or is it something of a talking shop?
Well, that's up for Neil Richmond to prove to the public now, given that there was this massive hype up of how the government were going to haul in the retail forum early, calling it an emergency meeting to ensure that they get the message across that your costs do have to come down because the households around the country are suffering. There's an indication that the next meeting in 6 weeks' time that they're going to have to show or prove how costs have come down. But I mean, but the argument here is, if they don't, what happens? I know the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was speaking on Virgin Media last night and he didn't rule out a windfall tax on grocery retailers, but and said, look, if it is the case that there's evidence of high profits and profiteering in the market. But I mean, we're going to be talking about this for a number of weeks. We talked about a windfall tax for a number of weeks on the energy companies before it came in. And again, like the Taoiseach warning that, you know, while inflation may start to level off,
it's going to take time. And even if it does, it's not going to.
Yeah, prices are not going to go back to where they are. So it's not only the retail forum that is going to have to look at the retailers and reducing their prices, what actually the government is going to do now.
Because and Lisa Chambers, what can they do? Look, I mean, do you support a windfall tax? Look, I mean, how much of this is carrot and stick, or just hoping that if there's enough public debate about it, we might see another wee slice off the bread or a little bit of reduction in butter or sugar? What is within the government's gift to actually really, really tackle the high price of food?
Well, I think calling the retail forum together and having that conversation, that will have an impact. I've no doubt about that. Having them back again in a number of weeks to show what they're doing to address the concerns raised by that meeting, that will have an impact. The debates like this will work as well. You know, there have been calls for price controls, but the government have been advised very strongly against doing that by the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, where they point to it having been abandoned in Spain because of the negative impact it would have had on smaller retailers who come under this as well, and also where it had been implemented in France and Greece, the lack of evidence to showing any sort of benefit to the consumers. So it is important that we take advice from people that, you know, are working in this space or experts in this space, and that we don't do something that would cause more problems than fix any problems. So what we can do is support consumers directly, which we are doing with those significant direct payments, and we've got one of the best social protection systems in Europe, and the level of support from government, I think people have to honestly recognise, has been huge.
Well,
financial
in studio
support
here, Nat
and
O'Connor,
you said that yourself, Dervil.
Lisa is shaking his head fiercely. But Breed, I want to go to you just quickly. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk and challenges from the opposition in respect of this. But we can't nationalise our supermarkets. So if you were in government, what would you do to cut the prices at supermarkets for consumers?
Well, I think we may not nationalise our supermarkets, but we can bring in price controls. Price controls are brought
in. You just heard from Lisa Chambers that they haven't worked
elsewhere.
They've
had advice that they can't do it it hasn't worked elsewhere, but we can do it. And the factor that's missing out of this is that the prices for these foodstuffs in Ireland are way higher than the EU average. So whatever about the EU and other countries and the way they're managing it, we are being ripped off. This is rip off Ireland writ large, and particularly for the cohort that Nat represents, but also for workers. And technically, effectively, workers haven't had a pay increase for many years. In fact, they've had a pay cut because inflation has gone ahead, way ahead of the increases. And there's no sign of workers getting a pay increase, of social protection, of pensioners being protected. There's so much more that the government can do that they're not addressing. And we're awash with money, according to the minister.
Yeah. Then just to move on, it's not just Nat food prices, because that news this week that a quarter of all households have been raised on their gas bills. Energy must be a huge concern for older people as well. For everyone, of course, but for older people in particular.
Absolutely. Energy is a real concern, because particularly if you're living alone, or if you're living at an older age where you're staying at home a lot, you need to keep warm, you need to keep your house warm. And unfortunately, you know, on average, older people tend to live in older houses, which are poorly insulated in this country. And so we haven't got that tradition of well-insulated housing that they have in other countries. So the cost of energy is very high. And if you're living on the state pension, people are worried about going into debt. And so people will cut back a lot on the heating, not staying warm. And that's a huge concern for us. So the government has taken some steps to expand fuel allowance, make it more widely available. But we'd like to see more done to focus on the poorly insulated housing. Because if you're not eligible for the fuel allowance, then you don't get the free upgrade. And so at the moment, only about 4 in 10 older people would be, you know, in the system, but there'd be many more outside the system who would need that help.
Possibly outside the threshold as well. Ciara Phelan, the political implications of this, you know, we had Minister Ryan in studio this morning speaking incredibly enthusiastically about the offshore wind, but it was difficult to time down to when we were going to see a drop.
Not for a long time.
In energy
and
prices.
It's clear in his answers that obviously it won't be for a long time. We have to go through the planning process of after this auction, end of a decade. And that's not good enough for the people that Nat has outlined there, that are already cold in their homes and are turning off their meters because they can't afford to do so. Also, you know, we've heard time and time again from groups that they want to see those on the working family payment be eligible for the fuel allowance. And there's actually an argument as well to expand the eligibility crisis to access the fuel allowance. I think this is something that the government will probably have to do. They did move
a government that has, Ciara Phelan, a 65 billion surplus.
Yeah.
There is, I suppose, it's jarring to be discussing the huge impacts of inflation and then politically, how are they going
to
navigate
feeling
that
pressure, absolutely. Like, I've spoken to cabinet ministers who would say that it's proven a very difficult conversation at the moment because there's so many people struggling and there will be pressure on them to spend more. Look, they have been very clear in saying that there will be another, you know, big social protection budget in a couple of months' time. But again, that's October. Those payments normally don't come until
after
Christmas.
And Lisa Chambers, we're not going to see energy prices in particular fall for quite some time. You know, we have that surplus, that huge 65 billion surplus. How, Lisa Chambers, how can we have that and yet see almost a quarter of people in arrears on their gas bills? How do we reconcile that?
Yeah, look, the energy price increase has been a huge challenge, not just for Ireland, but for all countries across Europe. I mean, the war in Ukraine sent prices through the roof in terms of gas and electricity. And one way we've tried to deal with that and tried to help people has been the energy credit, the €200 payment. We're on a third payment now, so it's been €600 taken off people's bills. We've had a €400
nearly a quarter are still in arrears.
Well, we've had a €400 payment, lump payment for fuel allowance. We've expanded the fuel allowance criteria, so more people are qualifying, and that is means tested. So those that are most in need are the ones qualifying for that payment. So the government has taken action, if we were to be fair in assessing what's been done to date.
And do you think it's fair? Do you think we need another rebate? I did ask Minister Ryan this morning, do you anticipate we could have another rebate in the mix, considering those that because of the hedging and because of the advanced purchasing, we're not, even as prices come down, the wholesale prices, most consumers are not going to see that. It's not going to probably hit their pockets until next year at the earliest.
No, and I think, you know, the hedging and the advanced purchasing is something I think we've all learned a lot about in the last couple of years that we wouldn't have been fully aware as to how that was done. So energy purchased in advance. That's why the figures are not coming down in line with the prices globally. But that will happen eventually. So look, the credit that was given, that may well happen again. That's not off the table. The minister is considering that. And you asked the question about the 65 billion surplus that the country has, and the pressure on the government to spend some of that. It's easier to do lump sum payments because it's not permanent spending. And we've been warned very, very strongly not to commit to permanent spending using corporate tax receipts, because we can't rely on those. That's why we can't use it, say, for public wages or spending that happens on an annual basis. But that's why you're seeing lots of lump sum payments.
It is a
challenge. And that's why you're seeing massive investment in capital, in infrastructure, because we can use that windfall corporate tax receipts to pay for those types of things. But we can't use that for permanent spending, because we would be putting the country in a vulnerable position if those corporate tax receipts were to reduce at any point in the future.
That's a fair enough point in terms of that difference between strategic support and then these kind of one-off supports, which are very hard to wean.
Let's not mix up things, though. I mean, yes, we have a big windfall for corporation tax, and actually the big corporates, the multinationals, are also boosting the VAT and the income tax. That's true. And we do need to put that money somewhere for one-off investment, such as in more housing and so on, things we need, like hospitals for the future. But at the same time, regular taxation is also growing. Inflation grows the tax pot because the value of money goes down, so there's simply more. So as a result, the government could have put an extra €10 on all welfare payments for just 800 million at the last budget. You know, we're not talking billions to preserve people's core welfare incomes.
And sorry, the one-off payments. On
no,
that?
Well, if I may continue, the one-off payments, you just add up the numbers. People are losing, on the state pension this year, it'd be more than €900 less spending power than you had in 2020. And you might be getting 400 or 600 in one-off payments, but it doesn't add up to make the difference. And for couples, it's worse, because a lot of those one-off payments are just one per household, like for the fuel allowance. So there's a big gap there, and it's a growing gap of people spending power. We need to look at the core welfare, the core pension.
How do we, make for, because obviously sometimes one-off payments can be very, very crude. They mightn't obviously reach those who need it the most, or perhaps other people who've more income are benefiting from them too. So how would you assign part of that surplus that we have to address the current crisis?
Well, I think Nat has made the point. There's more and more money in other areas other than just windfall taxes. And we have to close the gap between the very, very vulnerable and the very wealthy in this country. It's a huge amount of wealth in this country. And there's loads of ways of getting permanent income from introducing taxes on wealth that will be permanently coming into the economy rather than the once-off corporation or windfall taxes. And we have to look at that. The redistribution of wealth is central to this. And it does mean looking after the people that Nat represents, looking after workers as well. There are couples out there, one couple evicted from their home yesterday in very tragic circumstances by one of the biggest companies in this country, Ernst & Young, who are now on the side of the street, and they are both working. It's incredible what's going on. These are not paupers. These are working people.
We know from the rental crisis that it isn't just those who are challenged in income. Lisa, I wanted to come back in on that, because what you're saying there, as I heard, it's that you're not ruling out another rebate, but that there is a need, I suppose, maybe to be more focused and strategic about the investments.
Yeah, I'm not ruling out another rebate, and that's certainly something that the government are considering. And the government is continuously monitoring the cost of energy and gas and electricity for households, and has taken action and will continue to take action. And that's why pensions have gone up, incomes have gone up, so they are increasing year on year. I take the point Nat's making about the cost inflation and the spending power, and of course we have to watch that. But making a call for an 800 million increase in social welfare payments year on year is not an insignificant request. That's a lot of money to commit the country to every year, and it does need those types of decisions need to be taken carefully, because as the point I made, the wealth tax is a different debate we've had, and we can go into that, take us another hour. But the point I'm making is that when you've got corporate tax receipts, yes, it's great to get that money in, but you can't use that for permanent spending. Infrastructural investment, like the calls for a new cancer centre in Galway, that type of infrastructure, or building rail and road key piece of health infrastructure, that's where we can spend it. But the temptation for the government, the easy thing to do for the government coming into this budget is to spend. That would be irresponsible and would be a short-term measure that would cause us problems in the long term. So the government are being responsible, and Michael McGrath, the Minister of Finance, has said he wants to put some of that money away for future pensions, for any other knocks to the economy that may come down the road. That's a prudent management of the economy that will save us in the long term, and that's the right way to manage this, in my view.
Now, O'Connor, I wanted actually just to bring that, Lisa was just talking about there about older people and providing for the rapidly ageing population that we have. There was the lead story in today's Daily Mail was landlords want younger people as tenants, not older people that they'll be afraid they'll be stuck with for years. This was a landlord advocate, it was the Irish Property Owners Association, one of their members, said that older people are no longer attractive tenants to some property owners following the introduction of new legislation which gives tenants more rights. In light of what we heard from Micheline Walsh earlier this week when she was on the programme, the prospect that landlords don't want to get, quoting it here, stuck with older people is something that must be a real concern to an already vulnerable group.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a really a horrible story and a horrible situation. I mean, most landlords are decent, and if they have a tenant who faces homelessness, they're going to hold back. But what we're seeing is that there are some landlords who are really just focused on short-term profit, getting the most rent they can out of their tenants, and they prefer to have younger tenants, according to this article, because perhaps they're easier to manipulate, or an older person might know their rights or might, get more sympathy, as we've seen in recent cases. But it just shows that we need to think about the long term. In 2016, at the last census, we knew that it was 2.5% of older people were renters. We expect those figures to be much higher. We don't have the figures yet from the last year's census. But, you're looking at a situation where many people in their 50s are renting. You could have 1 in 10 older people now renting in the private rental sector in, say, 10 years' time. And you can't afford those rents on the state pension. And yet, if you have a little bit of savings, you won't have enough to be a homeowner, but you might not be eligible to get local authority, the social housing either. So there's going to be a lot of people caught in the middle who need security of tenure. And other countries have solved this by giving people 20-year residential leases, lifelong leases, so they have security. The rent may go up, but it's manageable with retirement income. But we haven't done anything to protect people.
Kierfield, some people, when they hear that headline, they might think it's distasteful, but actually maybe it just reflects a reality for property owners. It struck me today, there's a lot of other stories in the paper talking about how people are postponing things, getting married, having children, buying a home because of the cost of living crisis and other factors. This is something that's going to be really, though, coming down the tracks for the government, isn't it? Like, we're constantly getting warnings about the looming pension bill.
Yeah, big time, and how we're going to fund it as well. But just in terms of the housing situation, like, the comments made by the member of the Irish Property Owner Association today have not gone down well with some politicians. I was trying to ring them this morning when I saw the front page of the paper, in terms of it doesn't help the situation, because for a long time we've had backbench TDs asking basically, we don't really know.
Any of them who are landlords, it should be pointed out. But look, actually, just saying that, is there a sense that this gentleman was actually calling a spade?
Because probably.
It wasn't an attack on older people per se. He was just saying, pointing out that since last summer, a landlord no longer has the right of termination every 6 years. And after 6 months living in a red sea, the tenant will have a right to remain in the property.
Yeah,
older
but the question,
people, to be fair, are good tenants.
Yes.
They're going to be staying there for longer. Yep. So is that not just the reality that he's reflecting.
But then the question needs to be asked, Ervil, why would you want someone that was going to be, why wouldn't you want an elderly or senior citizen in your property for a long period of time? Because if you want, if a landlord wants to get...
if a younger person is moving, looking out after other party, and you can increase the rent, presumably.
Exactly, that's it. And that's the issue here, that wasn't, you could read between the lines in the newspaper article, but that is the issue here. And the situation is that the government will say the RTB are there, and when you're a tenant and you've moved on and the next tenant come in, there is an obligation there not to increase the rent significantly. But because there's such a lack of supply in the market, tenants that are grateful that they actually find a house that they can afford and get into don't want to raise that matter with the landlord in case they're shipped out and they lose the property. So that is the story here, that basically there's
the irony breeds the rent. Myth that a more reliable tenant could be considered a greater risk to property owners is something sort of quite remarkable.
Well, I think we should remind ourselves, not all property owners are once-off landlords. A huge amount of them, and increasingly, are big hedge funds, property companies that own a huge amount of the property that we're talking about. And if they're choosing younger people deliberately over older people, it is because of what Ciara said, is that they're more flexible then to be able to increase the rents. Mm-hmm. They have more possibility of getting more money out of people.
Do we need specific housing for older people?
We absolutely do.
Because we have a rapidly ageing population.
We absolutely do. And I've banged on about this since I was a councillor. It is so, so sensible and easy, and it's done elsewhere across the world.
Do you get many older people coming into you?
I'm creased with older people, and I have to say older women. Older women in particular are very vulnerable. And I know Sean Moynihan of Alone, who did this report with Threshold yesterday. It's a very, very important report. And it's a very misfortunate that Darragh O'Brien didn't turn up for the launch of it, because it's a hugely important. It speaks to the future. And what we need is housing stock in local communities where those people live that is suitable for what their needs. One-bedroomed, simple housing stock. It's cheaper to build. It's locally based, and they can stay within their networks, their communities, and their families. And that is the point alone.
You look at countries like Japan that are way, way ahead of this, actually creating communities for older people. The solution as to everything with the housing crisis is build more houses.
Well, absolutely. And what Breed said there, I mean, people want to age in place. They want to stay in the communities where they've built their lives. So absolutely, we need to make sure there is housing stock available so that people can keep their networks, the networks of support, their local GP and all the rest of it, where they are. People don't want to be shipped off to somewhere else to live. They want to stay in their communities.
Yeah, they really do. Before I go, let's go to GAA. Go, Lisa Chambers, just in the last few moments, were politicians playing the populist card with the GAA Go situation?
Well, in which respect, Ervil? Because I heard politicians take two different sides. The majority were against the GAA Go and the premium subscription service. But I did hear a number of TDs and senators actually say, well, they thought that the GAA were within their rights to charge for this. So, look, my own personal view on it is that I don't think it's the right way to go. It's our national game. The broadcaster is already getting paid from the state to run a service.
But I think we can't show every single championship game on the TV, can we?
Maybe not every single game, but it is a public service to broadcast.
Except
games,
Down, County Down, they can go on any time.
Well, look, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, when you look at the GAA, it's volunteers that run the organisation for the most part.
Yeah.
It's volunteers that train the kids up to senior level, and it's volunteers that are there on the sidelines of games right across the country. So, in producing, if you want to call it a product that you're trying to sell in terms of TV, you know, there's no cost of production really, because it's all volunteers putting it together. So, my view is that, you know, if you're every community in the country, whether you're a paid up member of a club or not, most of us, I know I buy raffle tickets or lotto tickets, or you pay into a club or you support or sponsor. That's so common across every community. So we all have ownership, I believe, of our national game, and it should be free to watch for
okay.
citizens
well, listen,
across the country.
We really do actually have to go on GAA Go, because that is all for today. My thanks to Lisa Chambers, Nat O'Connor, Ciara Phelan and Breed Smith for joining us for The Gathering. And that's all for today. Thank you for listening. You can catch up on anything you might have missed on this morning's show on the RTE Radio app. Today's programme was produced by Rachel Graham, researcher Emma Cawley. Broadcaster was Jareth Holland. On sound, we had Liam Mullen. And the series producer is Alistair McConnell.